everybody. What a great way to start the Ask Beattie Show for 2023. I'm Beattie Cohn-Fredos, and welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beattie Show. And for those of you who may be wondering, who's Beattie Cohn-Fredos and what is the Ask Beattie Show all about? Well, I am a psychotherapist and a sex therapist, and I'm the author of the groundbreaking book on relationships, a book that I certainly wish I had had when I'd started out years ago in my own dating and relationship life, for better, for worse, forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And this book is based on my research with 450 people, and I actually developed a 10-step formula that teaches all of us how to assess. Yes, assess. I know it doesn't sound sexy or romantic, but the importance of assessing who somebody is and who somebody is not, particularly given the very high divorce statistics, which continue to go up despite all of the self-help books and therapists and programs on relationships. And you look at the domestic violence statistics, and every single week, I keep hoping that I'm going to be able to, you know what, everybody, we are starting to see some changes when it comes to divorce, domestic violence, teenage dating abuse. I mean, when you think about it, when you were a teenager, when I was a teenager growing up in Winnipeg, I mean, really, dating? I mean, maybe the worst possible thing that a girl could have said was that maybe he tried to kiss me when I didn't want to be kissed. But things have changed, and we have to really be real. And this is why I think that really and truly being very, very careful about who we let into our lives, and not just romantically, but also professionally and our friends as well. I'm also the advice columnist for Dan's Papers in the Hamptons and in Palm Beach. And just recently, and I was really excited about this, I also became the advice columnist for the Jewish Post and News in Winnipeg, Manitoba. And this is where I was born. And I remember every single Friday, the paper would arrive. And I grew up in an Orthodox Jewish family. And my parents, unfortunately, are not alive, but I know they would be so thrilled that their daughter was writing for this paper. And I know that many of you have seen me on national television, of course, heard me on national radio, and I've been hosting, and I can hardly believe it, I've been hosting the Ask Beattie Show now. We are going into the 9th year. So what is this show really all about? Well, in one word, it is about empowerment, and it is about educating ourselves and empowering ourselves, whether or not we're talking about mental health or physical health, so that we can actually keep ourselves safe. So we talk about all the things that we can actually do to improve the quality of our lives and our relationships. We talk about mental health issues, sexuality, and of course, relationships, and how and what to do, again, not to just think about, not to just dream about, to maximize our physical and emotional well-being. And I have a mantra, and I've been hoping all these years that you would also adopt this mantra. The mantra is this: to be willing to acknowledge, address, and resolve as best as we can, even though we can't change our history, the things and also the people that get in the way of our lives and our relationships. And one of the things that I hope that I've really convinced you over the years is that we do not need to take this journey on our own. And what does that mean? Well, reaching out to family and friends, if you're lucky enough to have loving and supportive and compassionate and non-toxic family and friends. And of course, if need be, professionals can make our life journey much, much easier, less isolated and lonely. Now, as you know, every single week I ask you the same questions about how you are doing and are you living your life across the board in ways that are in your best interest. Because when you think about it, we schedule every single year, at least most of us do, appointments with our physicians and our dentists just to make sure that our bodies and our teeth are strong and healthy. So doesn't our mental health merit the same kind of attention? So here we go. The how are you doing questions for this week? Mental health. Okay, are you generally feeling happy with life, your relationships, and the general direction that you are going in? And overall, on the other hand, have you experienced long periods of depression that have lasted longer than a couple of weeks or months? And if you're feeling that the depression and the anxiety or even suicidal thoughts or gestures are really starting to take over your life, despite the fact that you are exercising and you are meditating and you are trying to take vitamins, are you willing to reach out and ask for help? And I hope that the answer is really going to be yes. And what about your relationships? This is the second category. Do you have people in your life who really care about you and who you can depend on? And it doesn't have to be dozens and dozens of people. We're lucky if we have one or two people who we can really count on, and particularly count on in a crisis. So in looking at your relationships with your significant other, if you happen to have a significant other or children or family or friends, are these relationships largely positive? Now, remember, we all go through a lot of ups and downs, so that there are going to be issues in all of our relationships. But I have a zero toxicity policy. That means not a little bit of poison, but zero toxicity. So if you're finding that despite your best intentions, that there are people in your life where it's really self-destructive and destructive and self-sabotaging to have them in your life, I'm hoping again that I have convinced you that you do not need to stay in these kinds of relationships and that you need to give yourself permission to exit. What about communication and problem solving? How are you doing in that particular area? Are you able to express honestly and openly the full gamut of emotions? And when there are issues, as there will always be, it's not about running away from problems, but do you have the skill? And all of these things really are about skills, about education, and really relationship education skills. Do you have the skill and the knowledge to be able to deal with issues and solve problems? And if you are finding that you don't, again, what are you going to do about it? Because certainly emotional communication and problem solving, if these skills are not present in our relationships, we are going to have a very, very difficulty being able to have successful relationships with anyone. And what about drugs, substance abuse of various different kinds, whether or not we're talking about prescription medication or over-the-counter medication? Yesterday, I had a new patient, a man 72 years old, who arrived, and he told me that he was starting to experiment with marijuana. And after all, it's legal now in so many different states. And, he said he'd had a really, really bad reaction. So again, we have to be very, very careful about what it is, whether we're talking about prescription medication, over-the-counter medication, and other types of drugs, what we are ingesting. And what about physical health? I mean, they've been very difficult times, certainly with the pandemic, to really try and stay in shape. So how is your physical health generally? Are you in pretty good physical condition, including, you know, having blood work done within the last year. And if you're under a doctor's, care, are you taking the doctor's advice and taking medications as prescribed? And are you exercising? And we can make all kinds of excuses. It's too cold. It's too hot. I'm too tired. I'm too busy. But the importance of incorporating exercise into our lives, I know it certainly made a huge difference for me, particularly in terms of my emotional well-being. And what about sleep? How are your sleeping patterns if you're having difficulty falling or staying asleep? Because we need about 7 to 8 hours of restful sleep most nights. And, you know, what I have found so often is that people are on their devices. I just recently wrote an SBD column for one of the publications that I write for. And it's just amazing. People are spending anywhere between 8 and 10 hours on their phones, you know, during the day, during the night, we're checking our phones. So again, and we have to be very, very mindful. And I think the key is thinking about doing things that are really in our best interest. And again, if you're looking at self-care, do you feel that you're doing a good job physically, mentally, spiritually, to really live your life in ways that you are taking care of yourself? And what about goals? Do you have clarity about where you are in your life right now and where you want to go? And you believe that your goals are realistic and achievable and sustainable. And even though you have yet to fully achieve, I don't think anybody ever fully achieves the goals, you feel that you are on the right path to eventually reach them. And I know that these are tough questions. And yes, I ask you the same questions every single week. And yet it's very important that we are honest with ourselves, because it is our avoidance and denial and our blame and our self-blame and our defensiveness that really keeps us in a downward spiral. And it does. It takes a lot of courage to be willing to acknowledge, address, and resolve the issues in our life. And yet, what happens if we refuse to step up to the plate and confront our demons, the old and the new? It becomes increasingly difficult to fully enjoy our life. So here we have, it's a brand new year, 2023. And again, the question is, are you willing to do whatever work you need to do? And you don't have to do this on your own. And ultimately, the choice is yours. So make it a good one and try to commit and think about it. Even though last year may not have been a good year, the year before that may not have been a good year, commit to making 2023 the best year yet. Okay, is that a promise that that's what you're going to do? And I'm hoping that your answer is yes. Well, I am so excited today. I choose my guests very, very carefully. I have never wanted guests to come on the show to just promote their books. So my guest today is a really, really interesting and special lady. And I wish that she was here in New York right now. We were sitting in the same room together, but Dr. Angela DeRosso. And I was thinking about what better way is it to start the new year than having Dr. Angela DeRosso as my guest. And she is a dynamic professional on a mission to change the face of women's health and wellness. She's a respected, internationally recognized authority on women's hormonal health. Yes, hormonal health. Understanding the range of health issues women face leading up to and during menopause. And in 2016, Dr. DeRosa wrote a really important book, which I am recommending to all of you. It's A Woman's Hormonal Health Survival Guide, How to Prevent Your Doctor from Slowly Killing You. And the public and the media and the medical community took notice, and rightly so. and in fact receives an avalanche of requests from physicians across the country wanting to learn more. So Dr. DeRosa, welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm so glad I can see you on Zoom.
Thank you so much for the delightful introduction and just having the opportunity to speak with you today and your members of the audience.
Well, absolutely. Where are you, by the way, right now?
What state? I'm in Scottsdale, Arizona, a little bit warmer than New York right now.
I love Scottsdale. Definitely, definitely warmer than New York. So here's the issue. I mean, you say that health issues in women of all ages can often be traced to one root cause, which is hormone deficiencies. Mm-hmm. And I'd like you to really elaborate on that, because there's been so much controversy and there's so much confusion about whether we should be taking hormones, not taking hormones, what kind of hormones. So this is quite a statement that you are making here.
Well, the way I look at it, and let me just say that a lot of the information that you may have heard about hormone therapy, a lot of it is incorrect. Mm-hmm. There was considerable damage done about 20 years ago by the media's outpouring of a great deal of information about hormone therapy that basically said it was killing women. And nothing could be further from the truth. The data did not really pan out that way. And in fact, there's been over the last 10, 15 years, a lot of mea culpas about that information and saying, oh, we were wrong. The problem is the damage was done. And a lot of physicians even still adhere to that outmoded notion, and they have not self-corrected by understanding the real data. So the good news is it's getting better, because some of the larger organizations are finally catching on and they're taking note of that. But it's unfortunate, because not only physicians, but a lot of our patients are scared of hormones when they really shouldn't be. So I just wanted to say that first and foremost. But to your point about hormones being the root cause, and almost when I'm an internal medicine doctor by training. So I really am very cognizant about learning, having had learned all about chronic disease states in adults, from high blood pressure, osteoporosis, heart disease, diabetes, you name it. I understand the mechanism of actions, how they infect women, and how they kill us, honestly. But what's fascinating to me is that as internists in our training, we're taught to really manage those illnesses with medications. Right. And everybody just continues to get putting on more and more meds. Nobody gets better. We tell our patients to go eat right, exercise more, and hope that they take their meds and they're compliant and they get better. But here's the problem. If you don't fix what drove those illnesses in the first place, all we're doing is hoping the patients continue to take their meds, which make us sick, by the way.
Right.
And hope that they listen to our judgment when we are actually a big part of the problem. So, which is what led to the my book, is that I don't think doctors are intentionally hurting patients. They just don't know better in a lot of cases. So what do I mean by all of this? So for instance, if we think about diabetes, pre-diabetes, insulin resistance, diabetes, that whole illness category, most of that starts when we become testosterone deficient. Now, I want to put out a comment here quickly, is that women, our most abundant hormone is actually testosterone, but we don't talk about it. Men make testosterone, women make testosterone. We both make a lot of it. So how does that, if it becomes deficient, lead to insulin resistance and diabetes? Well, when we eat a meal, everything converts to glucose. Chicken takes longer to get there versus a candy bar, but everything ultimately turns to sugar, which then needs to be used by the body as fuel to work and do the things it needs to do day to day. Once we eat that meal, the sugar floods the bloodstream. It is actually testosterone's job to sensitize the muscle to take in that sugar to burn it as clean energy. If we lose our testosterone, our muscle's not sensitive anymore. It becomes resistant to taking up that glucose. So what happens is a couple of things. First off, the pancreas has to secrete a ton of insulin now to deal with it, where maybe it didn't need to before, which then burns out the pancreas, which leads to insulin resistance and prediabetes. Number two, if they can't effectively deal with it, then the body converts it as fat and stores it right in our midsection. So what that leads to is prediabetes, weight gain, and it becomes this vicious cycle, which then leads to diabetes, which then leads to more medications, which don't really help the problem. And then we have the heart attack and stroke that go with it. And if you just go back to where it started with that testosterone deficiency, in most cases, we could have prevented that whole event structure from occurring. So when you look at estrogen therapies, when we're deficient in estrogen, our endothelium, so the inside of the arteries, become hard, which leads to high blood pressure, which leads to cardiovascular disease. We lose estrogen and testosterone, which both help our bone. We develop osteoporosis and the hip fractures. So you can see that a lot of these illnesses that are really troublesome and very problematic start with a deficiency of a hormone that could really stop that progression. And it's unfortunate that we don't really talk about those things. We give people's meds and don't go to the root cause. So when patients, I never, ever, ever tell a new patient, go exercise and eat better. Because if their thyroid is low, they're going to have a low metabolism. If they're testosterone deficient, they're going to not burn insulin or sugar correctly. It's basically like telling them, go hit your head against the wall. You're never going to lose weight. And I'm going to sit here and badger you. Until I fix those problems, I should not even be having that conversation with that patient.
You know, what's so interesting, and I've been thinking, you know, in my own life, and fortunately, I'm very, very healthy. The subject of hormone therapy, Dr. DeRosa, has never come up, ever, when I have seen family practitioners over the years now, because I know about this. I am the one that has raised the issue. And it was really interesting. About a year and a half ago, I had a UTI, and it was recurring, and I didn't understand what was going on. And my gynecologist had been out of town for a couple of months. So I went to one of the, the urgent care facilities here in New York. And there were tests, and there were blood tests, and there was this, and there was that. So finally, and of course, nothing was happening. And then I went on antibiotics, and what happened with that? So everything got worse. So finally, my gynecologist returns back to New York, and I should have probably, seen a gynecologist rather than go through this nonsense that I put myself through. Mm-hmm. And the first thing she said was, Beattie, she said, I'm sure you're low on estrogen. Mm-hmm. So she prescribed the estrogen, and within a couple of days, everything was fine. And I take 2 a week, and the pellets, and I haven't had a urinary tract infection again. But with all the doctors, I saw a number of different people. It never, the issue of estrogen or hormones, it did not come up at all.
Because of your tissues, when you become estrogen deficient, they become very thin. And I look at it, it's like going from a forest to a dry desert. You have cracks in the desert, which can lead to more bacteria and which can lead to a lot of urinary tract infections. It's very common. But again, once again, we're just doling out medication without thinking, well, what's maybe driving that in the first place, and fix it so it doesn't reoccur. And it's maddening, because medicine is really, it's a way of thinking and how to approach patients versus just slapping medication and dealing with the acute problem. It's basically putting band-aids on a symptom versus treating the problem.
Well, as I see that most psychiatrists and people who are treating people, for, in quotes, mental health issues, are doing exactly the same thing. I mean, I am so not a fan of American mental health. This is not
what I was saying. Here's what's so maddening, and then the gender bias. I mean, a lot of the stuff that patient, if a male walks in with similar complaints as a female, they get put on hormones, where a lot of times we get put on antidepressants and we're labeled either chronic fatigue or as crazy. And as you just alluded to, it's fascinating to me is that what we don't pay attention to. So in women, typically in our mid-30s, barring any like hysterectomies where we take our ovaries out or anything, but typically on average, most women start to develop testosterone deficiency in their mid to late 30s. Mm-hmm. And aside from libido and the insulin stuff that we just talked about, testosterone is Mother Nature's serotonin. So usually women in their mid to late 30s start to develop panic attacks, anxiety, depression, mood swings, apathy. And it's largely due to the testosterone deficiency, but instead of recognizing that and putting them on that, they get put on antidepressants, which then only makes the circumstance worse, and they become numb to society, and we're keeping them that way. And it's alarming to me.
You know, what I found interesting is that when your book came out, that doctors started to pay attention.
And are you certainly not in a good way? Let's just say I did make some friends with that. They couldn't take a joke. I mean, it was really meant to, the title was meant to obviously gain some attention. And But if they didn't have a sense of humor, they really thought it was a pot shot at them. And I'm like, you don't understand the point. It's really at the whole overall tenor of how we treat women in medicine, and that these medications, they do slowly kill us over time. If we don't address the hormone deficiencies and we continue to give women medicines they don't know, we're basically putting these women into zombie-like states and waiting till they do a slow march to death. And it doesn't need to be that way.
Exactly. And that's the point. The consumer doesn't know, which is why we should be doing discussions like this every single day, 365 days of the year, on every network, on every healthcare segment. Because, I mean, the consumer is bombarded, when you think about it, with all these commercials, right? Take another pill.
Yeah. Or, who do you believe? I mean, and the problem is that the pharmaceutical industry is creating billions and billions of dollars for their bottom line on keeping us sick. And hormone, I mean, you think about it, if we just replace hormones in women, think of all the medications women may not need: sleep meds, antidepressants, blood pressure medication, osteoporosis drugs, anxiety medications, cholesterol. I mean, there's a whole host of them, and they don't want to see that go away.
No, exactly. You know, you talk about testosterone, and this is something that you rarely hear testosterone discussed in relation to women. I mean, certainly in relation to men. And it's kind of surprising to me, or although probably shouldn't be after all these years, that testosterone is something else that never comes up during a physical, whether it's with most gynecologists or most family practice people. And is that your experience as well?
Oh, absolutely. There's so much ignorance about the role of testosterone in women, and it's actually really, I don't know if it's not comedic, but if it wasn't so serious. I mean, I hear other physicians saying, well, women don't need testosterone. I'm like, are you serious? When you look at actually our biochemical makeup and actually the quantitative levels of those hormones in our bloodstream every day, we make more testosterone daily than we do estrogens. And you cannot tell me that that's not an important parameter. And what's also important, when you look at when testosterone becomes deficient, it presents itself exactly the same in women as it does with men. We get low libido, we get lack of desire, we get insulin resistant, we get headaches, we lack executive function thinking, we become depressed. It's the same pattern in men as it is in women when they're deficient. And we end up going through those symptoms much sooner because we make less estrogen or testosterone than men. Right. And our ovaries fail sooner than men's testes do. So we're more likely to experience it at a greater degree and level than more men do, but we address it properly in men. If the man walks in with that symptom complex, they get diagnosed testosterone deficiency, put on testosterone. We get diagnosed with depression or chronic fatigue syndrome and put on pain pills and antidepressants. So there's tremendous gender bias in medicine right now.
What kind, because I had let people know that you were going to be on the show, and hopefully there are a lot of people who are listening right now, but what kind of hormone testing should be done and beginning at what age, just to be ruling out whether it's depression, anxiety, low testosterone, right, low estrogen, or other physical problems?
Well, so so let's take a woman who is not on any kind of birth control whatsoever, just someone who has functioning ovaries, you haven't done anything to stop them in any way or form. So an average woman, unless there's some genetic component to it, so for instance, I went through menopause at 35 because I have a genetic variation of premature ovarian failure that caused me to have that happen sooner than later. But the average woman, most women are going to start to experience testosterone deficiencies in their 30s, followed by estrogen deficiencies in their 40s. Uh-huh. I always think it's a good idea in their 20s to get a good baseline of their hormones. And then when you start to see changes occurring in that mid-30s is another good time to really start addressing it. Now, keep in mind, birth control pills, patients who go on antidepressants and certain other medications can cause those ovaries to stop making testosterone. So all women who are on a birth control pill are already suffering from 100% testosterone deficiency. So there's a whole host of young women that are already having those symptoms, but again, we're dismissing them in them. So those women we talk about, they have a great deal more depression and anxiety. Well, it's because they're testosterone deficient. Certainly social media and a lot of those things contribute to it. But biochemically, we have more women on birth control pills than we did 20 years ago. And it's making things worse. It's causing weight gain in them. It's causing sleep problems, low libido, and all these other things in these patients. So typically I like to see screens in the 20s when they're starting to have symptoms, or at least in the mid 30s. When you're looking at what should you be screening, all women should have a total testosterone checked. I want to check estradiols, but there's a hormone that goes with that. Is it called FSH, follicle stimulating hormone? That's the brain hormone telling me, does it like my hormone levels or does it not like my hormone levels? Because so for instance, let's say you and I both walk into the doctor's office and they measure our estradiol level and it both comes back at 100. Well, is that good or is it not good? Well, it could be perfect for you and not so good for me. And the only way to know is by looking at that FSH hormone. It tells me what the brain is doing with that level and saying, yep, it's good or no, it's not. So that's an important hormone to check. I always check a prolactin, which is the breast milk hormone, but it can be over secreted in certain disorders that can mess up all of your hormones. And it's something we should screen for. But then also, I call it the axis of evil. You have testosterone, you have the estrogen categories, so estradiol in particular, and then thyroid. They work so intimately together. And a large majority of women, not only do our ovaries slow down, but so do our thyroids, which can cause a whole host of problems like hair loss, weight gain, depression, cold all the time, constipation, everything just slows down. So it's important to do a full thyroid panel in those patients. And then, so that's a really good hormonal screen, but it's also important. I'm a little bit neurotic as an internist, but we shouldn't always assume that everything a patient presents with is hormonally related. So for instance, if a patient comes in with hot flashes, it's most likely estrogen deficiency.
Right.
There are certain other illnesses that can cause that same symptom. So I always do a good what I call a metabolic screen. I look at their, do they have anemias, which may be leading to fatigue, that which could be hormonal or thyroid, but it could also be, let's say they have had chronic blood loss from a colon cancer. So you want to make sure you're ruling those things out. Look at the liver, the kidney, and basic stuff too, just to not create tunnel vision that you assume everything is related to hormones, although it most likely is.
So we need a lot more Dr. DeRosa's around the country.
We're trying.
Well, it's absolutely true, because when a patient comes in, and I'm not sure whether or not the insurance, which of course is a whole other issue here in this country, does insurance pay for the kind of hormone testing that you are prescribing?
Most likely, no. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, you can get basic. Well, that's interesting, is when patients come to see me, a lot of folks who do what I do, we no longer take insurance. And that's for various reasons. Number one is that the insurance companies are actually working against the type of medicine trying to instill. And they don't believe if the therapies we're prescribing aren't FDA approved commercial pharmaceutical agents versus a compound, they're not going to cover it. So there's a whole host of problems. So we don't typically take insurance. But what we have found is a lot of times I can order blood panels and have their insurance cover those blood panels, but then the care that I provide would be cash only. So that's typically the blend you'll see out there with doctors like myself. There are some that still accept insurance, but they're limited in what they can provide, and they may just have you pay cash for certain pieces of it. And then there's others who use cash labs and various other things, but I try to save patients money where they can and let them use their insurance where they can, and then use the hard-earned dollars for the therapies versus the blood testing.
So it can become a real financial burden. I mean, I'm not sure how much the hormone therapy. I know the pellets this morning.
But the pellets are the best.
I actually, you know, knowing you were going to be on, I figured I should pick up my estrogen before the show. So it was $250 for, which of course the insurance did not cover. I think it was for 24 pellets, for 24 estrogen pellets. And, you know, fortunately, it wasn't an issue for me, but for a lot of women, I mean, that's a lot of money. You figure 24 pellets, $250, and plus testing and plus, you know, out-of-pocket expenses to get, you know, to have the testing done. It's a dilemma.
It's just like eating good food. I mean, all the best stuff for us is very expensive, versus like McDonald's is cheap. And I see it's no different in medicine. All the really good, healthy, preventative aspects of medicine aren't covered, and they should be. Hormones, to me, are a preventative baseline that should be provided to all patients if they want to prevent chronic illness. But the problem is insurance companies are very short-sighted, and they don't believe in that kind of preventative coverage. But you're right. I mean, when you look at certain practices, it can be cost prohibitive. If someone's on access or Medicaid, they're not going to be likely able to afford the therapies that a lot of the docs that we've been forced to go in that direction, because unfortunately, the insurance industries don't make it easy for providers like us to do the care of medicine that we want to do.
Do you feel that women, and, you know, for us to continue to get the word out, that when they're having issues, physical issues or mental issues, that we should be very proactive in saying to our doctor, we would like the hormone issue ruled out before we start with all kinds of
medication? And you're absolutely right, but I caution you on making sure you're having the right person rule that out, because a traditional doctor may look at a hormone panel very differently than the way I look at it. And it's about a level of education and true understanding of how to properly interpret those labs, because I have found that some of those labs, they require some special training to understand how to properly do that. So you don't want to go to someone who doesn't know what they're talking about, and then they say no, when in fact you're sitting there with a whole host of problems and they just didn't know how to recognize them. But you're absolutely right. What's interesting is over the last, I've been doing this 25 years now, and the medical profession is advancing in this regard because of patients, not because of doctors, but because of patients, because we're demanding more of the medical profession. And that's what's going to drive change. And when you look at my back of my book, I have checklists of things to ask providers, so you know if you and where to find certain providers. One of the best things I always tell patients, if you're literally looking for somebody to do this in your area, call the local compounding pharmacies, or I'm a medical director of one of the largest national pharmacies called Belmar Pharma Solutions. Sometimes just reaching out to those people, like my company on a national level or your local compounding pharmacist, they're going to know who the people are that are open to this and are generally the good folks in your neighborhoods. But you want to ask the right questions, and I also want to know what to look for. So if someone says, oh, there, sweetheart, you're too young to have hormone issues, you need to run out of that office.
Right.
So it's important to know what are those red flags that suggest that you're in trouble. You need to get out.
Right. So this is not just about one typical blood hormonal workup. I mean, again, the consumer, we are at a disadvantage because we really don't know. I mean, let's say we're having a conversation with a doctor and we're questioning maybe it's hormones. From what you're saying, I mean, there's many different ways to detect what it is that's really going on.
Right.
And exactly. So hormonal tests may be done, we may not be getting the
Well, just to give you an example, so let's say you walk into your doctor's office and they draw an estradiol level, and they don't draw that one test, the FSH I talked to you about. They draw an estradiol, and that estradiol level comes back at a 5, which is really, really low per the quote-unquote reference range. So most docs who don't have the proper training go, oh my gosh, you're really, really low on estrogen. You need to have a whole bunch of estrogen. So they put you on estrogen. Uh-huh. Next thing you know, your boobs feel like they're going to blow up. You're bloated. You've gained 20 pounds, and you're weepy. Clearly estrogen excess. And what they did was they misinterpreted it. And let me give you the example. Let's say I have two patients. Let's say you and I walk into our doctor's office. You have an estrogen level of 5 and I have an estrogen level of 5 as well. Mm-hmm. And the doctor would say, oh, you both have low estrogen, but one could be normal. And let me explain how you would know that. That FSH, that brain hormone, if it comes back between 5 and 10, that means the brain is happy. So if it comes back between 5 and 10 and an estradiol level of 5, that is actually the level you should expect when you're on your menstrual cycle. It's normal. But if your FSH comes back 100, which means the brain is very, very unhappy, and your estradiol level is 5, that patient's menopausal. So they could have the same estradiol. One's normal, one's menopausal. But if you don't understand that and know the right labs and how to interpret them, both patients would be told they're estrogen deficient. And so you really need to make sure that you have the right doctors looking and interpreting stuff.
So you're suggesting then that, and this is a great idea for everybody who's listening and who's interested in this, that the compounding pharmacies would be great places to at least inquire.
Yes, that's because they have the general knowledge of who's compounding hormones in your general area. Now, I'm not to suggest that all of them are going to be great, but they'll at least know who the ones are. And a lot of times those pharmacists do know who the good people are and who they really respect in the area. But that's a decent place to start. If you're looking online, I mean, I would really look at their websites and understand, are they really true hormone experts? And that's what they do. And they're not just, say, a gynecologist who you assume is a women's health expert, because they're the worst offenders. Only 20% of them actually understand hormones, really, truly. So I typically find that those are the best places. But if you want to, I mean, again, at the national level, you could always reach out to Belmar Pharmacy. They would know who are the good folks in the area that specialize in pellets and all those other things. But again, your local pharmacies are going to know a lot who some of the good folks are. But in some cases, you may have to go some distance to do that. Or good news is a lot of folks like us are doing virtual consults, too. So you can obtain information that way.
Right. No, I think that that's really, it's a very important resource that I think that most people wouldn't have thought about. Gee, yeah. ask my pharmacist, you know, about who they would recommend.
Yeah, not your Walgreens. I wouldn't go to your normal Walgreens, but if look up in your area, who compounding pharmacies, what, like, they have, there's lots of great little mom and pop compounding pharmacies, or even bigger national ones. They might know. So.
No, that's a great idea. Couple people wanted me to ask you about the relationship, of course, between hormone deficiency and a woman's lack of sex drive. Of course, there in my world, there are many, many reasons over and above hormones. Like people,
oh yeah, don't have even your complex is not. It's you could have normal hormones and still have a crappy love life.
That is for sure. But what exactly is the relationship hormonally between lack of desire, let's assume the relationship is good and life is good and everything is good. So we're left with the hormones. What is the relationship?
Yeah. So typically when I look at libido, testosterone is the prime driver there. So when we look at sexual disorders in men and women, most often in men, it's plumbing issues where they struggle with erectile dysfunction. And by the time they have really low libido, their testosterone levels are in the tank. But for women, we always say, well, we need to have female Viagra. Well, it's not going to really work for us because we don't usually get quote unquote plumbing issues. Our parts work just fine.
Right.
We get what I call brain issues. Our testosterone level becomes deficient, and you need testosterone to drive desire and that sexual response. If your testosterone's low, you're not going to have that quote unquote horniness or desire to sleep with your partner, be intimate. Also, when our testosterone levels become low, the clitoris is less sensitive, so it takes longer to reach orgasm. The orgasms may be blunted, where they're not as good as they used to be if you're able to achieve one. So testosterone is really that key hormone for libido and sexual function. Now, estrogen deficiency can also be a play in that, largely because if you become estrogen deficient, the tissues can become so... what they call it, say, is atrophy, but what that means is they become so thin and brittle that they bleed, and it's painful with any kind of penetration. So if you have pain when you're having your sex, you're not going to want to have sex. It becomes a major negative feedback. So it's important to make sure you have healthy tissues, and then you need to have the hormone testosterone surging in your body to ensure proper desire and proper function with the orgasms when they occur. So it's really important to have both of those in play.
No, absolutely. And again, you know, in my world, you know, I'll hear about estrogen and almost never, you know, women who are, you know, come from seeing their gynecologists or obstetricians or family practice people, testosterone never seems to come up in the conversation at all. And I'm so glad that you are emphasizing this over and over and over again in terms of also, you know, lack of desire and
absolutely. It's imperative. And it's interesting to me is that we give more credence to sexual function in men than we do women, but it's important. It makes us feel good about ourselves. It keeps that intimacy between our partners. And it's essential, I think, for a good, healthy quality of life within relationship. And I respect those that maybe want to be celibate or don't find joy in that, and that's fine.
Right.
But a lot of us, as we're getting older, we're not just going quietly into the night. We still want to be sexual and have that intimacy with our partners. It differentiates us from being roommates. So.
No, exactly. What is your hormone palette of choice? Because I know the pellet that I take twice a week, you know, the estrogen pellet, it's in a pellet form. But what other hormones, what other compositions are available?
Well, and I suspect that what you're taking is actually what we would call a troche or a rapid dissolve or a mini troche, and not an actual, they may look like pellets, but So I'm going to differentiate between true pellets and I think the pellets that you're referring to. So, and I'm assuming you put those under your tongue. Is that where
No, I actually, inserted in my vagina.
Okay. So you have intravaginal suppository pellets.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. So that makes more sense then. So typically, so the gold standard for hormone replacement in women is what we call pellets, and it's P-E-L-L-E-T-S, pellets. They look like little Tic Tacs, but what we do is we have a little minor surgical procedure where we create a little incision with a tiny blade. The incision's like 1 millimeter, like tiny on our butt cheek. So right on the fatty area, the outer fatty area of our gluteal, the fat there. And we drop those about, it's like a half an inch or to an inch below the surface. And they sit there and they do a slow release over 3 to 4 months.
Really?
And liver hormones with estradiol and testosterone in that format. And what it does is it, once those are under the skin and in the fat tissue, the body takes over the release. It takes more when it needs it. And so if you're under stress, you're active, you're it's just going to take more than if you're sleeping or just chill for the time being. So the body regulates a lot of it. In addition, when you first put them in, if you're so deficient, your body will eat them up like a starving man. And then once your levels become normalized, then it slows down the release and you can typically place those about 3 to 4 times a year. So that is the true gold standard for women.
Really?
My next favorite would be what we call fast burst sublingual tablets or rapid dissolve tablets or troches. They get put underneath the tongue and they do a slow release. They do a quick release, through the tissue and under the tongue and the mucosa. And those can be prescribed for testosterone and estradiol. There's creams available, which I'm not a huge fan of, but some people, that's what they prefer. For just vaginal, if you're doing a lot of the vaginal estradiol, that's good for a lot, I think, local estrogen replacement, but it's not really great for systemic. You get some systemic absorption, but not great. Then there's injectables, which I'm not a fan of at all, but there's a whole environment of all kinds of different things. But my two go-tos are the pellets, which get inserted in the fat in the gluteal region, and these fast burst sublinguals under the tongue for women. They work great.
So interesting. And again, I had never heard of the first way of doing it that you've just spoken about. Yeah. Is this something new? Is this something old?
Ironically, they've been around since the 40s. But they've really started taking off in, say, the last 10, 15 years or so. You're seeing more and more practitioners get involved in doing that kind of care. I actually have a training institute where I train clinicians across the country to do that kind of hormonal health delivery. It is honestly, when I went through menopause at such a young age, I was doing more experimentation on myself and learning everything I could about it. I've been really becoming an expert in this for over 20 years. So this isn't something I've just learned recently. And pellets, I swear to God, is like gold standard. It is like going from black and white TV to color TV. Any other hormone preparation is black and white TV, although some of them are very good. It's kind of like at least turning on the TV, but the pellets take it to color.
So interesting. And how are doctors, I know that you do a lot of presentations and lectures and seminars, how are doctors, as we're moving forward, responding to your evidence-based research? I mean, that's the bottom line.
Well, it takes an open-mindedness. I think that's improving, especially as patients are pushing the demand. But I also think that there's a lot of folks that are really disenchanted with medicine right now, and they're looking for alternative ways to get their joy back. And I also believe that a lot of folks are recognizing that they're not getting the outcomes that maybe they were looking for. Maybe there is something else. But again, you have to have someone who's open-minded and willing to look at that. It's getting better. I'd have to say that I call it the integrative medicine space, or functional medicine, or optimal personalized medicine, or all whatever you want to call it. That is a rapidly growing part of medicine, and more clinicians are jumping into that space. So it's getting better. It's just taking time, much slower than I like personally. So.
At least we're seeing that things are actually getting better, and the consumer is becoming, hopefully a lot more educated about these options. So it's just not going to be another prescription for antidepressants or another antibiotic for a UTI.
Yeah,
So
we got to talk with our wallets and our mouth and just really say, you know what, this doesn't resonate with me. And women know their bodies. They know when something's wrong. And if you're not getting the answers you think you deserve, keep seeking because they're there.
no, exactly. What do you feel really is the best way to get this message out to women who may not be listening to the show right now, who may not be lucky enough to, attend one of your seminars? What really is going to be the best way to
You know,
continue?
quite honestly, I've just seen women helping empower other women. Because that's how, I mean, even my own practices, how they grew so quickly was women telling other women the experiences that they've had and that they really have changed their lives and it's feeling better. So I think it's really just if you've had a good experience, share it with all your girlfriends. Don't be afraid to talk about this stuff because we're all experiencing it to some degree. So I think it's important that we get it out of the closet and talk freely about all these things and share for those of us who have had the care that we deserve, sharing that message with others. But I think it's really going to take people like yourself and just continuing to spread the word. The problem is we have a big machine working against us that has some very
Right.
large vocal mouthpieces that we have to work against.
Were
So
you surprised at all that I wanted to have you on the show as a psychotherapist and sex therapist to talk about this?
not at all. Yeah,
Well, that's a good thing because
no, that's right. Because it works together. I think especially when you're dealing with female sexuality, as you alluded earlier, sometimes it's not hormonal. I mean, I'm only one piece of the puzzle. So in particular with sexuality, it's so complex. There's psychosocial aspects. It could be domestic violence. It could be even privacy issues. I mean, there's all kinds of things that could lead to low libido and sexual function and hormones is it's a big piece and an important piece, but there's other pieces of it. So it's really that collaboration between specialists like yourself and myself that can really get women to where they need to be.
No, exactly. I'm thinking of all the women that I treat in my practices, and regardless of what the, in quotes, the presenting problem is, and women who've had severe clinical depression for years and anxiety and other issues, not that I have my charts in front of me right now, but I would say that nobody, Dr. DeRosa, has had a consult with a primary care physician or gynecologist who has suggested hormone therapy at all. And this
No.
is something, so when I meet with everybody again, I'm going to have them listen to this show because there is an archive. So fortunately, people can hear this and listen to it over and over again. And I'm going to really send this out on social media. And I'm sure you and your wonderful assistant, Monica, who, by the way, is really fantastic,
I love Monica. She's
will do
fantastic.
the same thing, to continue to educate and empower people. I mean, particularly women. This is a pleasure. I can hardly believe that the time has kind of come and gone. Just have a couple of minutes
Well,
left.
it's been a delight talking with you. Thank you so much for having me. And my grandmother's name was B, so I have a very lovely affiliation to that name. So,
Thank you, and it's a pleasure meeting you. And I will send Monica the link to the show, or my producer will send her the link to the shows. And
great.
thank you so much for this really important, very important information. So take care, enjoy the sun, and we'll talk.
You. Okay,
Okay,
bye.
take care. Bye. Bye. What an interesting discussion. There's so many things, and of course I talk a lot about relationships and sexuality and the importance of continuing to educate ourselves in all kinds of ways. And here we have an issue, where in this country it's okay, I'm going to write another prescription for the depression, for the anxiety, without looking at the root causes of what it is that may or may not be going on. And I am really, really hoping whether or not it's men or women, who are listening to the show right now, that you're really going to take in this really valuable information that Dr. DeRosa has given us. And don't be afraid. We have to be savvy consumers. So when we go to the doctor, and I'm certainly, in fact, I think what I want to do is actually have my hormone testing done. And I am going to follow Dr. DeRosa's suggestion and contact a very small compounding pharmacy here in New York City and ask for a recommendation. I mean, better to be safe than sorry. And if you're finding with the exercise and the diet and the meditation and the spirituality that you are still not feeling well, then we really need to be open to other options. I mean, this Dr. DeRosa, clearly an expert in her field. And, you know, I'm really hoping that this discussion and information is something that will be really useful to you and that you will be able to, you know, perhaps look at, you know, whatever ailment you are suffering from or are dealing with right now, that there are perhaps some other options to really be looking at. And she's so right. You know, when it comes to men and erectile dysfunction, one of the first things that we do is we want to look at, you know, the men's testosterone levels. And yet in women, it's so clear that we, if we're even thinking about estrogen levels, we rarely ever, certainly in my world and in my practice, we rarely hear women or even physicians who are treating women talk about and even recommend that there may be a possibility of testosterone deficiency. So this is why I love to do the show. And, you know, when I ask patients as they are leaving my office, you know, what is their takeaway? What are the lessons to be learned? You know, hopefully, and I've certainly learned something from my discussion with Dr. DeRosa, that there are a lot of important takeaways and lessons to be learned for all of us as a result of this interview. So again, it's 3:58 in cold and sunny New York City. And I want to leave you with my two weekly messages. The first, of course, is that we have to do everything that we can possibly do every single day to live our life in ways that are in our best interest. And no, that does not mean that we are being selfish, but to make sure that we are taking care of ourselves emotionally and physically and psychologically and in our relationships as well. And secondly, we all need to do a much, much, much better job in learning to love each other. So again, I want to thank you all so much for listening. And again, it's 2023. It's a new year, new possibilities, new beginnings. So have a really, really good rest of the day. And I will talk with you from beautiful, warm, sunny Sarasota next Monday. Take good care. Bye-bye, everybody.